We are with V, the guerrilla economist, who in a few months will disclose on this program who he is. How about that? But we're going to come back in a moment and take phone calls with him, your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with V, the guerrilla economist. And V, how do people see your channel on YouTube? How do they find you?
Sure, George. Just simply go to YouTube and just type in Rogue Money, and we'll be right there. And you could subscribe. We have daily shows Monday through Friday. We have lots of guests. My producer, CJ, does an awesome job of getting people on board. So we have quite a litany of you know, panelists and guests, and just an amazing time. Just amazing. We primarily focus on the economic and geostrategic. So Rogue Money on YouTube.
Any surprises coming up economically that we should at least be aware of, do you think?
I mean, right now it's just volatility. There's going to be a lot of up and down. I mean, you're going to see the market. And George, I was the guy back when the Dow was at 14,000 points. I said, hey, get ready. Dow's going to 20,000 points.
People thought you were nuts, but you were right.
Exactly. We went to 20,000, and I said, hey, we're going to go to 25, 26,000, and we hit those numbers. We're going to hit down 29,000. We know we're still on trajectory to do that, but between now and then, we're going to do that crocodile teeth up and down, all the way there. The dollar, and I said, hey, the dollar's going to get stronger and stronger, and it's been getting stronger. So there's a lot of volatility during this whole entire time. There's volatility in the cryptocurrency markets, volatility in the equities markets, but you know, hang in there. I think things are looking promising.
What about silver? What do you think?
You know, being in precious metals, personally speaking, I will tell you right now, I think I don't see a breakout, not anytime soon. I don't think 2018 we're going to see the big breakouts in silver and or gold. Heck, even Bitcoin. You know, we run a trading room over at our crypto school. We have it's called the CryptoSchool.io. We have a trading room over there. We have some of the best traders that work in that room. And I was sitting there talking with those guys, and we don't see Bitcoin going back up to, you know, the $20,000 a Bitcoin anytime soon. Not this year. Maybe sometime in 2019. But when you look at Bitcoin, you look at what the big money players are doing, especially with the Bitcoin ETFs that they've recently launched. They have this thing pretty much range locked, and I think we're seeing that range. My traders have been on our show saying, hey, you know what? This thing has been range locked. We've been following the algorithm on this since February of 2018, and it's looking like they're range locking it between 7,000 and 9,000. And that's what we're seeing. And I think right now, I think the immediate turn, we could possibly see a Bitcoin 4,400, probably dipping back to 5,000 before it goes back. Wow. And we start seeing maybe 9,000 again.
But and for the novice,
20,000 high, yeah.
For the novice, what does range lock mean?
Well, range lock is basically, you know, it's floating between a given range. So it's going to, like, take the point for Bitcoin as an example. They'll probably range lock it. So you'll see it go up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where you can, if you're trading, you can make a profit on it, where it's going to benefit the trader. So it's going to go from, let's say, you know, 7,000 to 9,000. Then it's going to dip down to 6,300.
Right.
Then it's going
to
go back to 7,000. Then it's going to back to 9,000. And so it's in that given range you're going to see it flutter about, which if you're a trader and you're trading, you're going to do very well. You're going to do very well in a market like that. But if you're somebody who just, you know, the terminology these days is hodling.
You go nuts.
Your life. You're going to go crazy.
Yeah.
You're going to have all sorts of depression. And
I'm up. I'm down. I'm up. I'm down.
Exactly.
Let's go to Joe.
How you doing? Exactly.
Let's go to your calls. Joe in Manchester, Connecticut. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, good evening, George. Hi, V. How are you?
Hey, good evening, George. How are you?
Good. It's Joe. Anyway, you kind of answered my question already about silver. I have quite a bit. Would you hold it? I've been accumulating for 16 years. I literally have a ton of silver coins.
That's a long time.
I just, you know, as a hedge against economic dollar collapse. But based on what you're saying, the dollar getting stronger, it's not good for precious metals. Do you think I should start scaling back? My cost average is about $10 an ounce when you put it all together. Should I scale back, hold, or maybe add more? And One other question. This is kind of a sidebar. Do you think that when President Trump meets President Putin, the President Putin might have some emails for him, the missing emails?
In terms of the emails, I wouldn't be surprised. Anything is possible. I think the Trump Putin meeting is a great thing. It's great for all of us who are freedom lovers, who love to see peace ring upon this earth, and it's bad for the globalists. In terms of silver, if you got in at a low price point at $10 a spot,
and it's at 16 now, right? Right about there.
It's like floating around between 16 and 17. If you're lucky, it might touch close to 18. Just hold on. If you can, leverage out of it, and it's not going to hurt you financially. You can leverage out of it. You can diversify a little bit. George had a great idea in the beginning of the show. They put $100 in Bitcoin or, something like that. That's entirely up to you. As long as it's not hurting you financially and you're not putting yourself at risk. There are people. George, you and I have heard this before. Somebody who hears something about, let's say, gold or silver, and they put their entire life savings into it. That's just crazy. But don't do nothing like that. But if you got it in a low price point, no harm, no foul. I don't see the harm in you holding it, and I don't see the harm in you
selling.
Selling. Yeah. So that's entirely up to you and your financial professional.
Gordon Gekko said greed is good in the movie Wall Street. What do you think? Is greed good?
That's a whole conversation for another day. There's some positives to greed. Let's be honest, because we have our world and some of the advancements and innovations that we have today is because men had that greed to become successful, to dominate, push innovation, and that's there. So greed's a good thing, as long as you're not, screwing over every single person and stabbing everybody in the back and doing it in a very immoral way.
Crawling over everybody to get there.
Exactly.
I've seen people do that, too, though, and it's...
absolutely. Absolutely.
Stay away from them. Randall is in Indianapolis. Welcome to the show. Hi, Randall.
Hey, it's always great to talk to you guys.
You too, my
friend. How's it going there, Mr. Z?
Hey, Randall, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey, pretty good. Hey, I got a couple questions. I got one big one, but then I got another one. Do you think that when this reset happens, do you think it's going to shake up the real estate market that much? I know they had a lot of funny loans back in the day. People basically didn't have a job getting loans for $200,000 houses. I don't think there's near as much of that going on today as there was back then. But do you think it's going to shake up the real estate market that much? What do you think it'll do to the price of gold?
Well, I think the coming global economic reset, I think when that happens, gold is going to moonshoot. Gold's going to move up considerably. Silver's going to move up considerably because what's happening right now, and we see this kind of beta test here, especially a few years ago, when Turkey, Iran, and India had their gold workaround, where literally India and Turkey was paying for Iranian oil utilizing gold as a trade settlement. And we're seeing this concept even now with the emergence of China with the Shanghai Gold Exchange, the Shanghai Gold Price Fix, and as well as the petro yuan with a gold trade settlement. So gold is reemerging. And what we're seeing as all this volatility, all this chaos in the world is a new coming financial order. And it's not a financial order based on some, single global government sitting somewhere, but it's a financial order based upon individual nations working together for the greater good. And guess what they're using as trade settlement? Gold. Gold is in every discussion for that. So gold will move up. In terms of the coming economic reset and the real estate market, there is no doubt real estate prices are artificially way high in this country.
Oh boy!
Number one, and number two, all the systemic problems that were with real estate years ago in the 2008 collapse have never been fixed. So we have a lot of those titles that have been leveraged and sold off 40 or 50 times over on the back-end mortgage-backed securities markets that are still sitting around there clogging the system. Most of it has been taken off of the market by the DTCC, the Depository Trust and Clearing Commission. Clearing Corporation in 55 Water Street right here in Manhattan. But the systemic problems are still there. So that is a massive bubble that still has to be burst. So, yes, I agree. You're going to see real estate prices come down. They're going to be more normal. So a $400,000 house should be $400,000, not $1.7 million, like what you see in San Francisco or something like that. I think you want to see a return to normalcy.
Welcome back to Coast, of course, with V, the Gorilla Economist. And I think I'm going to have a contest before you come on the show to tell us your real name, because then I'll have people guess, and we're assuming it starts with a V. So you could be a Vincent, yes. A Victor, a Vance, a Vaughn, a Vlad, who knows? But I might have a little contest before that. And then we'll put all the winners in a hat, because we can only pick one winner, and then give them some books and stuff like that.
That sounds like a great idea.
That would be funny. I'll even guess myself at the right time. But you say it's a couple of months away?
It's even sooner than that, George. It's even sooner than that.
Do your friends call you by your name or V?
No, they always call me V, ever since I was a kid.
Everybody. Okay, that's interesting.
Everybody.
Let's go to Brian in Indianapolis, east of the Rockies. Sure. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Good morning. How are you?
Good, Brian. Good.
Hey, Mr. V, how are you?
Hey, Brian. How are you, buddy? How's it going?
Good. Hey, listen. I got a couple of questions and a couple of comments, and then I'll take my answer off for air.
Okay.
Most of it was about the silver. I've been out of my 401k investing in it for about the last 3 years because I was worried about the presidential election and everything. But like half of America, we voted for a person who wanted to put America first in the economy and to turn things around. These trade war with China, I saw a report on the news that said that China's economy is based on exports and our economy is based on consumer driven. So China's economy is already showing, they said, is already showing signs of cracking. That was one of my comments. The other one is part of having Trump as president, man, is that the economy's going, the dollar is strong. You know, so what do you think the future of the dollar is? You know, people 2-3 years ago said, oh, you know, the dollar's going to go away. It's going to, you know, crumble and China's going to take over the world currency and blah, blah, blah. But I just want to have your comment for that. And I'm going to keep buying silver eagles because you can't go wrong when you invest in precious metals.
No, you can never go wrong. Definitely.
Hey, George, thank you for your time.
Okay, Brian. Go ahead, V.
Definitely. Great question, Brian. First of all, I'll say this. In terms of China, yes, this is going to bring China to the negotiating table. China has a lot of iron in the fire. They will come to the negotiating table. The also thing is that we need to understand that China has no desire to become a world reserve currency. They've seen the folly of the British, and they've seen the folly of the Americans of what we're going through today. So in terms of this, you know, coming global economic reset, in terms of China and this trade war and how it's going to affect things, I think it will favorably work out in a very diplomatic way where it's going to benefit both countries. Look, here's the deal. There's a tremendous amount of infrastructure work that needs to be done in this country. Like driving around here in the streets of New York, going over the bridges, going over the tunnels, and you've seen it in L.A., you've seen it in Chicago, you've seen it in Houston. A lot of the infrastructure is so dilapidated.
Oh,
it's very lackluster. There are countries like China that are rearing up and that are getting ready, that are more than willing to partner up with us in our infrastructure investments that get things done quickly. Trump knows this. And some of the sources that I've spoken to have already said that, yes, Trump is in the Trump administration is in communication with Chinese investment firms for Chinese investment firms and American investment firms and construction contractors to work hand in hand with developing and redeveloping the infrastructure in this country and getting our physical economy in place. Now, we're a consumer-based economy, which is a lie, which is not something that is healthy, okay? So we want to build a physical economy, an economy that's based on manufacturing and real wealth, because there's an old saying, and that old saying is this: the wealth of a country is created on the factory floor. Now, in terms of the dollar, what is it going to go? Okay, is the dollar going to go away? Is it going to go away? In its current state, after this global economic reset, the dollar will not be the same dollar that we're used to. It will be different. It will not be pegged to, to how it is currently, where, you know, it's kind of backed up by, well, let's be honest here, Saudi Arabian oil. It's going to be a new type of dollar, a dollar that's going to be backed by the resources of the United States. And I think that's, when you look at some of the white papers here that are floating around and some of the discourse that's been put out there with this global economic reset, one of the biggest things that are discussed is that each country's currency be based upon the commodity wealth of that particular country. And with us, I mean, just recently, if you look at Drudge right now, just what I said earlier in the program, we're going to be an energy powerhouse. There's a, right there, there's a link on Drudge.
Yep.
And then America is going to be an energy powerhouse. That's going to be what's going to be backing up our dollar. So we're going to have a real petrodollar. But that petrodollar is not going to be based on Saudi pipelines. It's going to be what's coming out of the earth right here in the good old United States of America.
We also need to do something about the homeless in this country. It's out of control. I mean, I see people sleeping in doorways, at buildings. It's sad. With a country with this kind of wealth, that we can't at least build some affordable, cheap, free housing for these people. The fact that they weren't dealt the cards we got, we shouldn't turn our backs from them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done, and I think that once the economy's cracked open, when it's really humming, and there's ready jobs, that'll be the greatest thing for these people to do, is just get back to work, put America back to work, get them off the handout, and get them on the hand up. You know,
when you talk to people, do you go to live events at all?
I've been to a few overseas.
Overseas, do you cover your face or what do you do?
I wear a gorilla mask.
I bet you do. I bet you do, don't you?
Yes, I do. I look like Cornelius from Planet of the
Apes. That's funny. Nobody knows what you look like, do they?
No, until they meet me. Then they're like, oh, you don't look like a monkey.
That's funny. Your YouTube channel, you don't show your face.
No, we're strictly audio.
That's right. That's what I thought, because I was looking at it today going, what's he look like? That's funny. I love it.
George, next time in California, we'll do lunch. I promise I'll take you out, man.
You're going to wear don't wear the mask, though.
I won't wear the mask.
All right.
If you're in New York, I promise I'll put on some LBS for you.
I'll
make sure you go home well-fed.
Let's take a quick call, then the break, and then we'll come back with final calls. Let's go to John in Maui in Hawaii, west of the Rockies. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hello there. Hey, Mr. V, I want to ask you a question here that I've been wondering for a long time. We are at $21.5 trillion in national debt. We are at 107% of the gross domestic product. At what point, what number do you think we're going to have an economic collapse with this debt?
Good question. 40 seconds left, V, before the break.
Sure. I think right now, when you look at the economy, there's some good things that are happening. But we must never forget that the current economy in its current state is still held together by electronic duct tape. We still got 95 million people that are permanently out of work. We still got 42 million on food stamps. We still have 101 million receiving some sort of government handout and or welfare benefit. So when you put it together, we still have about 52% of the country that is still non-productive. So that, coupled with the fact that our debt is ridiculously out of control, means that at some point this debt issue is going to be dealt with. And that is why this global economic reset is being talked about, in order to get rid of this debt, hit the reset button, and get these things purged out of the system. Because all the problems of 2008 were never fixed. It's just clogging up and festering the entire global economic pipeline.
We're coming back with final calls with V, the Gorilla Economist, in a moment. And welcome back. V, the Gorilla Economist, with us. Our final segment, V's main website, roguemoney.net, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. What do you see, V, when you make these economic moves and predictions? Are you looking at trends? Is it your gut? What is it that works for you?
It's raw data. And I think the greatest thing that one could do is understand that nothing is an island, nothing is myopic, nothing happens within a vacuum. And what I mean by that is this: you got to look at the entire global picture at stake. You got to look at who are the movers and the shakers. You got to look at some of the market makers, not just here in the United States, but abroad, overseas, especially in places like China and Russia, the Middle East. these are the things that kind of give you an idea of where things are going globally. So those are the main indicators for me, George.
Super. Let's take final calls here. As we move on, we go to Chris in Merced, California. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you just said that we need to pay attention to the global economy, basically. Well, Danion Brinkley is psychic, and do you know who that is?
We do, obviously.
No.
Okay. Well, he said that in Israel and the Middle East that they're fighting over the real issue is water. So the main thing that is the most valuable is water, isn't it? And what's happening in the United States with water?
Water's a great commodity. You got to have it. And if you're short of it, you got a problem. But go ahead, Chris. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Well, in California, we are having a crisis of water.
Yep.
And so how is that affecting our global economy if our farmers can't grow food?
Well, we have not had the water shortage that has crippled us at this point. There was a drought in California, but I think that's just about been lifted now. I don't know if you've heard about that, Z.
Yeah, I heard about the fact that drought thing has been lifted, correct.
And we're going to have water wars one day. There's no doubt about that. I mean, even the CIA predicts that.
You know, the funny thing with the CIA and what they predict, the water wars, you got to look at the flip side. George, you know this. You reported on this. You've had guests that talked about this in depth. We have the ability to manipulate weather. We have technology that could actually literally create a storm cloud out of thin air. These things do exist. So, you know, if there is a quote-unquote water war, it is because of artificial scarcity and nothing else.
That's true. I wanted to ask you about Saudi Arabia, by the way, and the
sure.
king-to-be has been rounding up all these wealthy Saudis, putting them in jail, holding them for ransom, and then they spit up billions of dollars and he lets them out. What's going on there?
Well, it's pretty interesting, George. Years ago, we had somebody who was very connected to the Saudi royals, from the Saudi family itself, communicate and speak with us and gave us a heads up of what was going on, told us who the next crown prince was going to be long before he was even crowned crown prince, and that's Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS as he's called, and said the play-by-play of what's going to go on with MBS, and we reported that on Rogue Money months and, in fact, years before it even happened. I wrote an article on it called Blood in the Sand that goes back at least 2 years before MBS even came to power. This purge of what happened in Saudi Arabia is not surprising. There is a change in power. There is a change of guard. You see, for the last several decades, Saudi Arabia has been pumping a lot of oil. And in the last several years, one of their biggest wells, and this has been reported by multiple sources, their biggest well, the Ghawar well. You know, there's six major wells, and the biggest one is the Ghawar well. The Ghawar well is pumping out 80 to 90% water. So most of the drilling that they're going in, most of the hydrofracking water they're putting into that drill, the pressure and to release that oil, it's coming back out.
Uh-oh.
So they're having a problem. So Saudi Arabia, since then, they have not been, putting out reports in terms of what their oil reserves are, exactly how much is left. Are they topped out? Are they at peak? They're not reporting any of that, and they're not disclosing of that, okay? And then on top of that, they've been quickly shifting. And as soon as MBS came to power, his moves were, number one, get Saudi Arabia diversified out of oil and into what? Natural gas. Well, there's a problem. They don't have any. So what do? They all of a sudden initially started a deal with the Qataris to run a natural gas pipeline through Qatar into Saudi Arabia through Syria, of all places. And this is back in 2012. Run it through Syria and then out into the Mediterranean ports, into Israel, and allow the Leviathan platform and the major find over there with the natural gas, link it all up, and then bring it up to the European markets to challenge what? The Russian monopoly on European energy. That plan went to shambles. And now, Saudi Arabia is in a race. They are in a critical crisis. Their old partners, they partnered out with the Qataris. Now they're trying to blockade the Qataris. They're trying to create a war with the Qataris. That's backfiring on them. They got into a spelunking adventure in Yemen because Yemen is also sitting on natural gas reserves, and that has blown up in their face. That's turned into a Vietnam-like situation for the Saudis. And the Saudis have objectively failed in Syria with their funding of ISIS, trying to overthrow Assad. They are in a serious situation. The kingdom is near collapse. And, you know, Ben Salman had all these projects. He wanted to, you know, the Al Nur city project, which was basically an island in the Persian Gulf, where he was going to make it a deep water port because Saudi Arabia is lacking a deep water port. And he was going to make it a high-tech city, kind of like a Dubai, to compete with Dubai on a banking level. And that's coming to naught.
So they've got some real problems.
Oh, big time. They're near collapse.
Jeez.
They're near collapse. 25% poverty rate. They are near collapse.
That is horrible. Dominic in Denver, it's your turn. Welcome to the show, Dominic.
Hey, thank you both. Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
I've called and asked a question before about the Denver housing market.
Mm-hmm.
But I have two questions. One is for your guest. What do you see regarding the housing market in general? You may have addressed it and I missed it. But more specifically, Denver, and, you know, for first-time homebuyers, it's difficult. And then second is any new debt. Do you recommend at this point in our, you know, with the potential economic calamities that could be going on, do you recommend taking on any new debt, like car loans, credit card debt, et cetera?
All right. Let's start with the housing market again, Z, which you addressed. But for his benefit, give us a quick overview.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a housing collapse. You got to understand, guys, the housing market, the housing mortgage industry was not something that was created, for you. It was created for the banks. Banks needed to move money. And a bank simply can't loan out money for the sake of it without a vehicle being there. And in this case, it's home ownership. And they sold everybody the pipe dream of, the American dream. You got to own a home. Folks, you got to get this mindset, right? Home ownership, when you look at wealthy people typically rent where they live, and often not, they own what they would rent out. In other words, they have income-producing assets. So if you're looking at a house or you just want to get a house, I would wait. I would wait a little bit because there is going to be a reset. You're going to see prices in a lot of these metropolitan areas that are artificially propped up because of foreign investments, because of mortgage-backed securities, because of all these artificial pressures in the housing market. I mean, think about this, George. Mortgage applications are the lowest they've been since 1965. Why are housing prices this high?
You can't hide those stats.
No.
Would anything about Denver specifically? I know the housing's pretty costly there.
Yeah, I mean, I would wait. I would wait. If you're not in an emergency or if you can stand to lose some money, and losing a couple $100,000 is not a big deal to you, and being upside down on a mortgage is not a big deal to you, then, you know, by all means, go ahead. But if you do care about having some sort of equity and not being upside down on a mortgage, because the worst thing you can do is, you know, buy a house for $600,000, then all of a sudden, a year or two from now, that house is worth $300,000,
yeah,
and you got a $600,000 mortgage on it. That's a bad situation for you to be in.
It sure is. You're stuck with that.
Exactly.
How about about new debt? I mean, if you want to get a new car, go for it or what?
Yeah, go. I mean, go for it. I mean, my whole thing it's not like you're going out there and getting the new Rolls Royce Phantom Series 3 for, you know, $600,000. If you're going out there getting a car, just get a car. You know, it is what it is. I mean, there's ways that it's not a big deal. If it's not costing you the majority of your income, like if you can afford it and it's not going to hurt you and you still have cash flow and you can afford to go get a car, go get a car. And that's what I said. If you can afford it, and it's no hurt to you that even if the housing market goes down, that, you know, you don't care, then go for it, you know. But if you're like me and you're the type of person that, you know, you don't want to be upside down on a mortgage or you don't want to get an overtly expensive car, you'd rather buy used, you know, then do that, you know.
Let's go to Kingston, New York. Henry's with us. Hello, Henry. Go ahead.
Hi, V. I listen to your show pretty much religiously. And there's an economic issue that's really talked about, and when it is, it's hardly ever talked about in a truthful perspective. And yet it ties into so many of the other issues we hear, whether it's education, the border issue, welfare, anything like that. And they call it the property tax. I call it the shelter tax because that's what it is. It's a tax on the necessity of life, so you can't really avoid it. Everybody pays it, whether you own a home or you rent.
Right.
Except that homeowners generally pay more than renters, and renters can always move. But the point is that it's almost enslavement and it's done by the states, not by the federal government, because it's just a money demand. You know, shelter is not anything that it's not a commercial transaction that produced gain. It's actually an expense. So where do you get the money to pay it? You have to go out and work and then give it to the government. I pay more in taxes on my home than I have income, you know? And so anyway, when you look at, you know, when you talk about, for instance, like the border issues, these people come here and they go to school. You know, I live in like just upstate from New York City a little bit, and we spend about $26,000 per child to go to school, which means that there aren't any working families with children in my community who pay enough to cover the burden that they place on society, because they don't pay enough. They're not paying $26,000 in state and local taxes, to cover one child going to school, never mind two, three, or four. And when you throw in the wear and tear they put on the roads going to work, they end up being some of the biggest deadbeats. Never mind talking about people getting welfare. It's something that really needs to be corrected. Our governor said it's the killer tax in the state. It's toxic, but that makes him the leader of a state that, you know, uses regressive killer toxic taxes against his own people. You know, when are people going to stop? You know, I asked my own state legislator. I called up and I said, "What do people complain about the most to you?" And they said property taxes, and then nobody ever addresses it and how it's really.
And they keep going up, don't they?
Yep. They're constantly going. But, you know, it's like in this state, it's a constitutional mandate that you pay education is free, for instance, right? But what they, instead of the state, and they said it's paid for by levying a tax on the value of people's property, their homes, right? But instead of that being a statewide tax, so that if you own a $400,000 home in Buffalo or $400,000 home in Poughkeepsie, you would pay the same tax. No, they delegate it to these little kingdoms so that, for instance, in Staten Island, New York, if you have a $400,000 home, you're paying less than half the tax people are paying just north of New York City. And if you live in Manhattan, my God, you're paying 1/30th the tax. In Manhattan, you would have to own a $24 million brownstone to pay the same tax as somebody with a $400,000 in the Hudson Valley.
Yep.
It's ridiculous, but it's regressive. Something needs to be done about it. The fact is, in our state, we have a 6% income tax. We could eliminate all property taxes by just doubling that income tax. And most middle-class people, you know, would benefit. If you looked at what you pay in your state income tax of 6%, most people would find that their property taxes are more than that. But we can't seem to get the politicians to do anything or talk about it. We're always bringing up these things of, you know, the border and, you know, everything else. And it's, you know, but it all comes back and you know, Medicaid, you know, half, a quarter of Medicaid payments are paid for by local property taxes.
Well, you know, Henry, I got to tell you, you're right about the property taxes. They are outrageous across the country. It's a huge statewide issue. And I don't think anything's going to be done about it, though, V. I think it's going to continue to go up until people go crazy.
You know, it's going to go up until this whole entire system gets reset, until we have this big, gigantic, bloated government bureaucracy done away with. I mean, I cannot stand property taxes. And he's right. I mean, in areas like New York, you'll have a $400,000 home or a $500,000 home with a $35,000 a year property tax.
Crazy.
It's asinine.
How do you afford that? Especially if you're not on that kind of income level, you lose your house.
Exactly. You know, so and what happens is a lot of these states have it this way. Why? Because a nice chunk of it goes to funding the welfare underclass.
It's crazy.
And that's what's happening.
We've got a minute left. Give us your websites and what people can do to track what you do.
Absolutely, folks, follow me on Twitter at The Rogue Money. And most importantly, check out roguemoney.net. Rogue Money on YouTube. Subscribe, join, like, and share. And check out our crypto school, thecryptoschool.io, and we have liquidbase.cryptogenics. And also, most importantly, guys, check out our crypto liquidation platform at liquidbase.io. Once again, it's thecryptoschool.io, liquidbase.io, and Rogue Money on both YouTube and roguemoney.net on the website. That's where we are.
We will see you in a couple months as we announce your name, okay?
Definitely. George, God bless you, my friend. Take care of yourself.
All right. I love it. V, the gorilla. He's an economist, and he just calls it the way he sees it. Up next, Ilana Freeland's going to join us. We're going to be talking about chemtrails under an ionized sky. What are they trying to do with us? We'll find out.